This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to Market Talk, where today we'll be discussing the chances of another rate cut from the Fed next month, what the rise of the greenback means for Europe and Japan, and what's next for China following another policy support announcement that failed to impress market watchers. I'm Harry Brooks, and today I'm joined by Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy for Asia, who joins us this time from Singapore. Welcome back to Market Talk, Ben. How are things in Singapore?
Very nice, thanks, Harry. I'm just here for a week. I'm doing a, I was on a panel conference earlier this week, so I'm talking about Asia bond outlook, so we can discuss a little bit of that perhaps. And yeah, enjoying a little bit of the weather here in Singapore. It's sort of still typhoon season, a bit late in Hong Kong, so it's a bit wet and windy over there. So much more pleasant here in Singapore.
Yeah, it's been risk of snow here in the UK. We haven't seen that just yet, but I know up in Scotland they've been affected by that. Okay, well, let's kick off by recapping what we learned from last week's US inflation data and the latest comments from the central bank. Core CPI data, which of course is of keen interest to the Fed, held steady at 3.3% on an annual basis, which was in line with expectations. But Jay Powell, the chair of the Fed, sounded a cautious note, saying the central bank didn't need to be in a hurry to cut rates given the strength of the economy, and he highlighted that 3.3% is still some way off 2%, the bank's target. What did markets make of Jay's comments and the chances of another rate cut next month?
Well, interestingly, actually, on the panel that I was on, one of the questions that we got asked was, what are the lessons learned from 2024? We've still got another month left to go. I guess we could learn some more lessons. But so far, I'd say it's been a year where it has paid to question when market narratives about inflation, about interest rates get very secure and very strong, question those narratives, because basically not very many people, if anyone, is any good at forecasting inflation or interest rates, and that includes the Federal Reserve, to be honest. Now, if you think earlier this year, right at the beginning of the year, we all thought inflation was beaten, didn't we? That was it. We were going to have dramatic rate cuts by the Federal Reserve. And then when we got into spring, we were talking about a no landing scenario. Yields were back up. I think the two-year yield got up above 5%. Then in the sort of late summer, we were worried about the US job market and we're back to hard landing. The Federal Reserve cut by 50 basis points in a bit of a panic move. We didn't realize that was going to happen until right before the moment. And then now, fast forward to today, we're now talking about potentially the Federal Reserve not cutting in their December meeting, you know, the one that's coming up just before the end of the year. I think it's on the 18th of December. So that sort of panicky cut in September looks as though, yeah, it might have been a little bit too much. Powell is saying that we're in no rush. Well, he was in a bit of a rush, wasn't he, in September when he cut by 50 basis points. I guess he's looking at a couple of things. He's looking at data that actually has been okay. So that's little scare that we had in September about the jobs data was just that, I think. It's a bit of a scare. Actually, economic data has been fine. Inflation, as you say, that I wouldn't say sticky, but it has, I guess, stuck a little bit around 3.2-3.3%, as you say, for last, I think that's 4 months in a row it's been around those points. It's been coming down steadily for a few months, but it's just got a little bit stuck. And so maybe the Fed will just pause and decide, well, maybe that's something that we don't need to do. But like I said, it has paid to push against some of these strong narratives. And, you know, we could easily get a little bit of softer data in the next few weeks, and this could all reverse as well. So take it with a pinch of salt. We might, you know, maybe the Fed doesn't cut interest rates at the end of December, but I still think we're in a rate cutting environment.
Point taken about the pinch of salt. How does all of this intersect with what markets are expecting under Trump administration going into 2025? Is the Fed, do you think, anticipating potentially inflationary policy choices and holding off lowering interest rates with that in mind?
Well, this shift that I mentioned from the cuts, from the sort of September 50 basis point cut to where we are today, which is a little bit more, well, maybe the Federal pause. Some of that was better data, but some of that was the Trump trade, as people like to call it. And that started happening even before Trump won the election, as investors, I guess, sort of thought that maybe he had a better chance than previously expected. And people looked at policies around, you know, what he's been saying in terms of reducing immigration, potentially putting on tariffs, reducing taxes, cutting regulation. A lot of this is pro-growth and potentially pro-inflation, higher inflation. So I think that has led to some of the moves that we've seen. Look, I mean, just take the two-year yield in the US, for example. So from the 24th of September, which was a low point for the two-year yield, just around that Fed big rate cut that happened. So it's quite low two-year yields until I'm taking the 18th of November, just a couple of days ago. That two-year yield moved up 75 basis points, 0.75%. That's a big shift, isn't it? That's basically three sort of rate moves that you generally get by the Federal Reserve, three moves. So that is a big shift. 10-year yields going up nearly as much as well. So it's the whole curve has moved up. But as I was saying before about this, you know, pinch of salt and maybe questioning this strong market narrative, there's a lot of uncertainty about President Trump, what he will do in his second presidency. A lot of uncertainty about nominations for his cabinet, for the senior positions. A lot of uncertainty about whether those nominations will actually get put through by the Senate. You know, I think there's a good argument to say that some companies that could be impacted by policies, could be impacted by nominations by the government, either domestically or abroad. You know, the tariffs spring to mind. Some of those companies might just decide to delay, maybe investment, delay a bit of hiring just to see how the dust settles. And that's what I mentioned earlier about potential for a little bit of, you know, softer data perhaps in the next few weeks, just as companies, like I said, just maybe look at that uncertainty and pause decisions. And that could easily, again, lead to yields falling again and the narrative that we're currently sitting with proving to be wrong again. So like I said, it's all up in the air at the minute.
Okay, so let's move on to what all of this has meant for the dollar. Since the US election, the US dollar has strengthened against developed market peers, with the DXY index at a two-year high now. Could we be nearing a period of dollar parity with euro? If that happened, I guess that would be good news for European manufacturers like Germany. At the same time, of course, they might have to contend with the US tariffs that you mentioned earlier on, if that ends up happening. How would you sum up the outlook there?
So I think the sort of the week after, straight after Donald Trump was elected, there was a lot of Trump trades being put on, or at least it was reflected in market pricing. So I've already mentioned yields going up. You quite rightly put the dollar. Now, the two are linked, of course. If yields in the US are going up and going up by more than the rest of the world, because it is a US phenomenon, the election primarily, isn't it? Then you're going to see more money potentially attracted to the US, and that's why the dollar was rallying. Just to make a point, actually, that the initial reaction was very straightforward. It was higher yields, stronger dollar, also higher equity markets in the US, particularly the S&P 500, the week of the election was up nearly 5%. And as the S&P 500 goes up so much, it's hard for other risky asset classes to sell off, because it's, you know, the S&P 500 is the barometer of global risk assets for a lot of people. So just about everything went up in value. Even, for example, in Hong Kong, the Hang Seng was up about 1% over that week. And you'd argue fairly easily that Chinese assets are not necessarily winners under a high tariff that could be put in place under Donald Trump. So even Chinese assets were going up as soon as Donald Trump was elected. But I do think that the next few weeks you're going to see some differentiation, dispersion, as we start to get more evidence about people in government, as we start to get more evidence about actual policies. And we started to see that a little bit. So the dollar, like you said, was up a lot. But if Donald Trump puts in place people that are, you know, very much trade hawks, want to increase tariffs, they're not going to be so happy about the dollar being very strong and other currencies being weak, because that undermines the whole point about the tariffs, doesn't it? If you just devalue your currency, it makes your products actually cheaper for US consumers, even if you were to put on a bit of a tariff. Now, obviously, it depends on the size we're talking about, of course. But maybe there'll be some pushback against this dollar strength. So, yeah, it's happened for now. We've definitely seen dollar strength again, you mentioned, against the euro, getting down towards parity. But, you know, these policymakers in the US will have a sharp eye on this. And I'd be surprised if it continued in a straight line for a while. I think, like I said, we're going to get a little bit more volatility going forward.
Interesting. You touched on Japan just there. I noticed that last week, one of the country's currency diplomats said the government was ready to take action against what he called excess moves in the yen after the US election. How likely do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, so it's not just US policymakers keeping an eye on currency moves. You're quite right. Countries themselves would be wary, not necessarily about just gradual weakness of the currency. That's seen often as a positive because it makes all your exporters more competitive. But they're worried about a few different... Some countries will be worried about importing inflation. If your currency is very weak, if you're an emerging market and your currency is very weak, everything you import is going up in value, and you don't always want that, particularly these days when inflation is still a little bit of a concern for a lot of countries. We mentioned sticky inflation in the US a while ago. There's still a little bit of stickiness elsewhere. And Japan is slightly different because they quite like right now to have a bit more inflation because they're still trying to get out of their multi-decade disinflationary trap, aren't they? But what they're worried about is when the currency is very volatile, because that's not great for businesses in Japan trying to make business decisions, etc. So the yen has been weaker. It's about 155 as we speak now. It's Wednesday today, isn't it? It's 155 to the dollar, roughly. Back in July, with the last time they intervened to stop it getting really weak, it was about just over 160, so not a million miles away from where we are today. So it's not a surprise that we're getting the rhetoric starting to increase. I think the Ministry of Finance, I think the Bank of Japan, I think the Japanese policymakers are happy to see a gradual weakening of the yen, as I mentioned, but they will step in if it does get volatile. US is not the only place with election uncertainty. Japan's got election uncertainty. They've just had an election, trying to work out how the next government will be formed, etc. So that's sort of weighing a little bit on sentiment there. So I just think that they will push back and probably just make sure that the currency moves are controlled to some degree.
It wasn't all that long ago. It feels like yesterday, but I think it was probably more like a month and a bit ago that we were talking about this magnificent run in Chinese equities following the rate cut from the authorities there, and hopes that there were going to be more to come. But a month and a bit is a long time in markets. And now it feels like every policy support announcement from China is met with a big shrug from markets globally. What did we learn from the latest one, and why were markets so unimpressed?
We've had a few policymaker meetings, various parts of government, various parts of the Communist Party. The latest one that we were all looking at was a few days ago, the end of the parliament, the standing committee, the core part of the MPC, the National Parliament. And they had a press conference after the week-long standing committee that they held. And there was quite a high expectation that we were going to hear some more about fiscal support. They did announce a huge sort of number, 12 trillion renminbi, which is a debt swap, in effect, for the local government debt that is off balance sheet in things like local government financing vehicles that they've been issuing for years and years and years, and using that money for local infrastructure, but sort of saying that it's not explicitly part of the local government. It's got these vehicles. And what the central government has now said, well, we'll now take all those sort of quasi-local government and we'll centralize it. We'll make it explicit, and explicit liabilities of the local government. That's a bit of a shrug to that number, because it's not new debt, is it? It's just refinancing existing debt. They're not going to be able to take more money and then go and spend it, or they're not giving money to developers or banks, etc. So we were really hoping for fresh capital. So, yeah, certainly a bit of a disappointment. There's probably stuff still going on in the background, and we're going to hear bits and bobs. We just heard some tax cuts the other day. So things are happening. It's just not as quickly or as much as I think is reflected or was reflected in the initial moves of markets. So, for example, the Hang Seng, we've already spoken about the Hang Seng reaction to the Trump trade. So that's a very good way of looking at Chinese risk assets. So from the 11th of September, which is just about the time when they first started to announce some of these stimulus measures, until the 7th of October, so about a month or so, the Hang Seng was up 35%. That's a whopping return, isn't it? But then since the 7th of October until the 18th of November, so again, about another month, a little bit over, it's fallen back down by 15%. So it's about reversed about half of that initial 35% move. But there's also an element of differentiation in China, just as I've been talking about currency, just as I've been talking about the US. So the Hang Seng, which is, I guess, a little bit more of a international flavor, technology index, has corrected quite a lot. But when you dig into domestic Chinese assets, the ones that probably would benefit the most from stimulus measures, they've done better, to be fair. Just looking at the CSI 300, which is onshore Chinese equities, are much more exposed to the US, to the Chinese consumer. That has only corrected over that same period, the last month or so. It's only corrected by about 2%. So we haven't had much of it only rallied by 26%, to be fair, only. It's still a decent rally, isn't it? But the correction has been relatively small. So, you're starting to see investors looking at picking out the sectors and the names that are going to do better. And that trade is still just about alive, although, we'll have to see. We do need to see some of these policies actually come to fruition.
Needless to say, developments in the US are also highly relevant for China. What did Trump's early nominations tell us about what the future might look like for US trade relations with China?
Yeah, I think we're still, we are educated guesses, I think is probably the best way of putting it still, but it's a little bit of guesswork because, Donald Trump during the election will say things, promise things, but then whether or not he follows through them, whether or not he's able to follow through them, to be fair, in terms of being allowed by the various, the House of Representatives, the Senate, whether his nominations get through, that's a totally different question. We do know that there is certainly a hawkish trade element to what he wants to do, what the Republican Party wants to do. We've heard threats of 60% cross-the-board tariffs for China, also looking at what China has done in the past, which is move some of those exports away from directly out of China into third-party countries that then do a little bit of stuff to the exports, and then they get exported to the US to maybe get round or reduce the impact of those tariffs. So, the Republican Party and Trump have been focusing on that. One thing we've seen, for example, already is and this is before Trump's even been inaugurated, and the new House, the new Senate are sitting. Before that, we've already seen the existing House of Representatives look to try and remove something called the permanent normal trade relations between the US and China, which would automatically put up tariffs. So they're definitely doing something. And we have seen, some impact on markets. But there's stuff that China as well can do to offset this. They can try and increase domestic demand. Going back to what I said before, some of that stimulus is probably about that, isn't it? Just to try and offset what we've seen, what could be in terms of weaker export growth. Currency weakness, again, we've spoken about that. Maybe they'll be looking to ease the Chinese currency a little bit weaker. There could be some retaliation. So they could be looking at some of the things that China imports out of the US. That happened last time, didn't it? Last time we had President Trump. And then ultimately, the thing that, again, we had last time was there was a trade deal between the two countries and China agreed to buy some more US exports. That could happen too as well. So really, really, really early stages, lots of things to focus on. Some of the markets are moving, and I think some of those markets will continue to move. But yeah, we're going to have to wait for a few more months to see this really unfold.
Well, plenty for us to talk about on the podcast next year then. It's reached that part of the podcast, Ben. What's your number of the week?
My number of the week, this is maybe the biggest number that I've had. Oh, yeah. These numbers of the week, 3.6 trillion.
Oh, wow, that's a big one.
Trillion. It is a big one. It keeps getting bigger every day. That's the thing. And that is the market cap of NVIDIA, with a massive US company, sort of semiconductor company. Now, 3.6 trillion is the market cap. That has been, I actually updated this. I wrote it down yesterday and updated this one. It was only 3.44 trillion yesterday. It's now 3.6. It added another 150 billion. Now, why is that important? That's because today is the results of NVIDIA. So we're talking on Wednesday. So I don't know what the results are. But, you know, this has such an impact on one company. But that is a large amount of dollars. So, for example, the FTSE 100 in the UK, all 100 companies in the FTSE 100, add them all up, you've got $2.5 trillion. So NVIDIA is like 50% bigger than that. I even looked at the US corporate bond in it. I mean, my background is in corporate bonds. I think that, you know, it's a massive asset class. It is huge. It's $6.9 trillion is the US investment grade corporate bond index. But that, you know, that's only two, actually it's a bit less than two times NVIDIA, just one company. So it is incredible, isn't it, how this dominates, will have such an impact. And, you know, let's see what happens tonight. I'm certainly not going to try and predict anything like that, but it will be impactful for US equity markets and impactful for just about everyone investing in assets. Just incredible to think about it.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Ben, and thanks to all our listeners at home too.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Legal & General Investment Management Limited, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for information purposes only, and we are not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general economic, market or political issues and/or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not an offer or recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against Legal & General in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this document contains third-party information, the accuracy and completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person resident in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulation. Copyright 2024. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. In Hong Kong, this material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.